You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Penalty is over. Wheeler's out of the penalty box. It's 4-on-4 now. Set it out in front. Slap a shove, a shot. They score. It was kept into the point and put down low, and everybody forgot about Slepyshev standing on the weak side here. Pass came out in front, and Slepyshev deposits it with a one-time slap shot, and Edmonton wins the hockey game in overtime.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning, TSN1290.ca. Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Right off the top, you heard the game-winning goal last night in overtime as the Edmonton Oilers, on the back of Anton Slepyshev's first goal of the preseason, defeated the Winnipeg Jets by a 4-3 margin, a game the Jets seemed to be clearly in control of with a 3-0 lead after 40 minutes. The Oilers came storming back to take the 4-3 victory, and I'd say it's a good thing that it's the preseason, so otherwise people would be a lot more apoplectic about last night's result. Probably a little more apoplectic maybe about the Jets result or something along those about the Bomber result last night. But anyways, Jets lose, Bombers lose. It's another Friday night here in beautiful Peg City. Gentlemen, good morning. Good to see you both.
Yeah, welcome back, Drew.
Thank you.
We missed you last week, but you were obviously preoccupied with the addition to your family, right?
That's so true.
We got to say officially on air here, congratulations, and good to have you back.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You can replace me with Erin anytime you guys want. I'm sure she did do, even though she can't speak, I'm sure she would do just as good a job as I do.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, we thought about replacing you, but then we decided that nobody else would spend their Saturdays.
That's true. With you
with
guys?
Us.
Yeah,
so
that's a fair point.
Yeah, we have to keep you.
That's
so
true. That's a fair point. Anyways, gentlemen, let's start with last night's game, and you know, we'll talk about the preseason sort of in general as opposed to just focusing on last night. The Jets now fall to 0 wins, 1 regulation loss, and 2 overtime losses.
Okay.
I know. Hey, I gotta give the facts, Richard. Just giving the facts. And no wins yet on the preseason, but at least they get off the schneid when it comes to goal scoring, as they're able to get some goals and get the offense going a little bit. Through 3 preseason games, I believe there's another one tonight in St. Paul against the Wild, if I'm not mistaken. It's either tonight or tomorrow night. Is it tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Okay, pardon me. Again, excuse, child. What's jumped out at you so far through 3 preseason games at this point in time? You know, anything that you've sort of circled as this is worth watching as we carry on throughout the remainder of training camp into the start of the regular season?
Well, I mean, I think the main issue, Drew, is the young players and who's going to make the team. I mean, that's really what the veterans, you know, is there chemistry, not chemistry? And some of the guys are injured, you know, Ladd and Little have had small injuries. I don't really care what the veterans do in the preseason. It doesn't really have an effect to me on the regular season. It's the youngsters and who's carving out a spot for themselves, on those bottom two lines. And I mean, it's tough to tell sometimes. You're looking at these, like, for example, the roster the Jets sent to Edmonton. That's an AHL roster. Like, that's an AHL game. So it's tough to tell when a player has a good game, say, in that environment. How much do you read into it? And then who is he actually playing against? So I think the preseason is very hard to get a read on at all. But I think your focus has to be on who's going to, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers and his role, and then guys like Andrew Kopp and youngsters and Brendan Lemieux, different guys like that. I think for the most part, and I said this about a few weeks ago now, I thought the Jets should have brought in a veteran forward to take some pressure off the young players, and worse comes to worse, you let the forward go or you eat a little bit of money or you have the young guy down on the farm or back in junior for a year. I think right now the battles are really amongst the youngsters for those spots rather than with the veterans. I mean, let's be clear here. Guys like Matt Fraser, Halaschuk, I mean, they're not more than fourth liners if they are fourth liners at best, with respect. So having said that, who's really battling for their spots? And if all the youngsters are battling, then I'm not so sure the development mode is where it should be. I just think some of these guys at this point appear to be getting spots not necessarily on merit, not that they eventually won't earn it, but they're getting it because there's no other options.
And it's difficult, I think, sometimes, guys, because I think that we want to see a 2 or 3 goal performance, or we want to see something really stand out of these prospects so we can say that they have absolutely earned their spot on this team in the preseason. But the reality is it's not just the preseason games which will lead to the coach's mm-hmm. decision that a player is going to make or not make the team. I mean, it has to do also with how the player is practicing. It also has to do with the needs on the team. And there are definite needs, and we've talked about this now for 3 or 4 weeks, that there are needs in the bottom six. And the Jets have the versatility of moving players if they need from center to wing or wing to center. But to me, a player like Alexander Burmistrov has been underwhelming. He didn't play very well in the games that I saw him play. And is he going to move to wing? You saw Nick Batan play wing, for example, yesterday, and I thought he actually played pretty well. And to me, that was a even more reason why I think you're going to see Andrew Kopp make this team. And that has to do with the fact that right now the Jets don't have that fourth-line center, and the reason why they don't have that fourth-line center right now is because they didn't re-sign Jim Slater. So you could possibly move Adam Lowry to fourth-line center, or, you know, you could another player.
They have a first-line center right now, theoretically.
Yeah, and that's absolutely – you can put this one on the board. There's no way that Brian Little isn't going to be the number one center for this team. I think that's just something that they're trying out right now to see how Brian Little would play on wing. I mean, I don't think you can expect Adam Lowry to be the first line center, and that's not because I don't think he's capable.
I don't think he's capable.
I'm the biggest Adam Lowry fan, but I'm just saying. I mean, Brian Little is your number one center. So, back to the original question though about the first three preseason games, Drew, and the fact that the Jets, haven't won a game clean. To me, that doesn't mean anything. Sure, they gave up a lead yesterday, mm-hmm. but the majority of the players on this team are going to be in the AHL or back in junior. In the case of a guy like Brendan Lemieux, I believe, even though, again, Brendan Lemieux I thought was impressive yesterday, but you know, he's 19 years old. He's a few years away, I think, from playing for the Jets, in my opinion. Again, you know, this is not anything that's written in stone. I don't think, with the exception of Nikolai Ehlers, Drew, and Andrew Kopp, I don't think any players really have a spot locked up. And even those two players, I don't know necessarily if it's locked up, but I would say those two players have the inside edge. Nikolai Ehlers, because he's got otherworldly skill, and Andrew Kopp, because I think he's probably been one of the most impressive youngsters for the Jets. You know, so as far as a guy like Joel Armia, I didn't see that much out of Joel Armia in the preseason so far. He hasn't done enough for me to warrant a spot on the team. And as far as Nick Batan goes, it ultimately depends on where they feel his development is better suited. Is it the AHL or the NHL? I think a player like Nick Batan could probably be served well with a year in the AHL, pardon me. So, again, we have 4 more preseason games, which seems ridiculous. They should really cut these games in half, to be honest with you.
Yeah. You need 2 preseason games, 3 max, because the guys, if the veterans don't play, or if they play, they're going through the motions, and they're all in good shape now. Training camp is not to get into good shape.
No.
So you really need 3 games max to watch some of these young players play. But it's all cash. It's like the World Cup of money, as I call it. It's all about money. The NHL, this is not just a Jets problem. It's an NHL problem.
Sure.
It's all about money. And all they want to do is load in as many preseason games at regular NHL prices as they can. 7 games. I mean, some of these games are not even close to unwatchable. They're just simply unwatchable. Like the game in Edmonton.
Yeah, the Wednesday game.
I know Edmonton played some of their players. But I don't blame the teams for not playing these guys because they're 7 games. But the NHL should get rid of this.
It's right across sports. I mean, we hear it in the NFL all the time.
So I agree.
The NHL is no different, but I agree wholeheartedly. Let me ask you this.
The only sport of the Big Four that doesn't have that problem is spring training.
Sure.
Because they don't charge prices at the same level.
Right.
I know they're in different stadiums, but they don't charge prices at the same level that they do for regular season games.
That's true. They've gone more. Spring training games have gotten more expensive over the past decade.
They have.
But they're not. But they're not regular price games.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point you make. You know, take the Wednesday game out, because like you said, Richard, the Wednesday lineup was pretty NHL-ish for the Winnipeg Jets. Through the first two games, the Tuesday game and the Friday game, you can sort of see some similarities in the lines that Paul Maurice has deployed. Wheeler, Shifley, Stafford played together both on Tuesday night, and they played together last night.
And for the last 20 games or so,
right.
Last season.
So you can mark that one down in stone, I think, at this point
probably,
in time.
Probably, yeah.
Unless they get off to a poor start, of course, in the regular season. Sure. But it seems like day one, when they start the season in Boston, that's going to be a line.
Yep.
And then another sort of thing you can look at is that Perreault and Ehlers have been playing together. Perreault on the left, Ehlers on the right. They've had different centermen. First game it was Lowry. Last night it was first game was Burmistrov. Last night it was Lowry. Do you think that you can identify something there that Paul Maurice seems to like Perreault and Ehlers playing together?
I mean, I think skill with skill. I think that's one thing. You're talking Ehlers certainly shows great wheels down. I like him on the off wing. You know, sometimes it's harder when a smaller guy on the off wing, but I like him on the off wing. He'll get more familiar in terms of shooting at the big league level and different things like that. Like he's able to get off his shot. He's showing good speed, good awareness, and playing him with a smart player is important. You can't put a skill guy with a guy who's not very skilled on the outside. A guy like Perreault helps him. He knows where to be. He's able to create space for himself. He's a very good passer. He's got really a quick release to Perreault. And you're helping Ehlers get into the pro level by playing him with a guy who knows what he's doing. If you were to put him with a kind of a plugger, boards, like benched, you know, like a guy like who's going to come around, no disrespect to a guy like Thorburn, whatever it may be, you can't put skill with that because he's not going to feed off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have with Perreault is a guy who's able to find Ehlers, know where he's going to be, and they can feed off of each other. I understand that. It might be different skill player. You might want to put him with a bigger player eventually. I don't know, but I can see where Paul Maurice is going with that. He's insulating young talent.
Yeah, and even though we could talk here about the line, I think that the line is going to change. The lines, I should say, are going to change. So, I mean, I think you're going to see Ehlers probably play on the fourth line. I think you're going to possibly see Ehlers not play if he's not getting the job done. I mean, Jonathan Drouin was a healthy scratch for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, again, I mean, don't think that Nikolaj Ehlers is just going to play on the third line all year long because he tore up the QMJHL last year. And I just gave a perfect example of a player who is no different than Nikolaj Ehlers, who ended up being a healthy scratch during the playoffs. So I think, you know, I agree with Rich. I think I've liked Nikolaj Ehlers there. It seems like Paul Maurice really likes him on the right wing there, even though he played left wing in the Q. And, you know, it seems like Adam Lowry, provides the size element. And, you know, Perreault, I think, is underrated how when he gets in on the forecheck, he's a physical player too, and Nikolaj Ehlers isn't. So I think, those three, I like the line. But again, Drew, I mean, I think everything is in flux right now with these lines. I don't even think you can really say that Wheeler, Shifley, Stafford is necessarily going to play for a good majority of the season, just because there are so many players on the Jets that have the ability to play the off wing or center when you're talking about Perreault and Stafford. So I think the big X factor, and I've said this for a while now, is Burmistrov. Where is he playing? If that's your third line with Perreault, Lowry, Ehlers, is Burmistrov your fourth line left winger? I mean, where is he fitting in?
And who's playing with Ladd and
Little? Who's playing with Ladd and Little?
You essentially signed Burmistrov to replace a lot of what Michael Frolik did.
Different players.
I mean, that's who you've brought in, because the Jets haven't brought in anyone else. Well, they re-signed Stafford and signed Burmistrov. And sure, they signed some other guys that you would say are third and fourth line guys, but Burmistrov, to me, I'm not sure where. I haven't seen any strengths yet in his game, but I still think he's better up the middle. But again, the Jets really are kind of set there, especially if Andrew Kopp makes it on the fourth line.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Paul Maurice said there's going to be four new forwards into the Jets lineup. We'll play the audio, we'll discuss it. Much more on the Winnipeg Jets training camp and the exhibition season to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
You're listening listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
We have to develop the pieces into the players to fit what we need. And we've got good young players. Whether they're ready, we're going to find out, because the fact of the matter is we're probably going to have, maybe not on the opening roster, but there'll be maybe four guys in our lineup that didn't play in the National Hockey League last year up front. That's a 30-year forwards. So, but we're going to figure out how to do it, and we're going to play our style of hockey.
Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice speaking to the media earlier this week.
Yes? Does that sound like a coach who's necessarily on board with that? You want to replay that? Can we replay that?
Can you replay it, Rory? Okay.
Listen again.
We have to develop the pieces into the players to fit what we need. And we've got good young players. Whether they're ready, we're going to find out. Because the fact of the matter is we're probably going to have, maybe not on the opening roster, but there'll be maybe four guys in our lineup that didn't play in the National Hockey League last year up front. That's a 30-year forwards. So, but we're going to figure out how to do it, and we're going to play our style of hockey.
I see what you're saying, and
he doesn't say that they're ready. He says we're going to find out if they're ready. Most NHL coaches don't want to find something out during the season.
That's true. And the difference, coaches obviously coach to win, and general managers generally coach to develop and win, but develop their players as well at the same time. And I would say that, you probably have a point to some degree, but I think Paul Maurice has enough job security that...
I'm not saying in terms of, he's got a long-term contract, or long-term you're going to have as a coach, but
sure.
I think 3 more years, 4 more years,
whatever.
Never really know with those guys. But he... I'm not saying... His job, he's going to do what he's going to do. I'm just saying, listening to that quote, it sounds to me like a guy who is not that comfortable with that many young players on his roster.
Perfectly valid point, I think, that you make there. Perfectly valid. I don't know how many coaches in the NHL would be comfortable with having... especially that's for coming off of a playoff team. It's one thing if you're the Carolina Hurricanes,
right.
And you're not going to make the playoffs, and you're going to need to have 4 or 5 young players in your lineup. Mm-hmm. But if you're coming off of a playoff season, I don't know how many coaches in the NHL would be that comfortable, inputting 4 rookies, 4 relatively untested players into the lineup. You're comfortable with the guys that brought you to good heights. Those guys, in some regards, are now gone, Frolique, of course. And now you're going to be trying to, do the same you did last year and better it with 4 players you don't really know how they're going to perform when they're really in the fire. And, if you hear some doubt in his voice, I think it's reasonable that it exists.
I'm not saying it's unreasonable. I'm just saying, to me, it's apparent.
And this goes back to the question, though, is the bottom 6 going to be good enough for this team to get back in the playoffs? Are the young players in the bottom 6, top 9, whatever you want to say, mm-hmm. are these players going to be good enough? Are they going to be able to replace the offense that the departing veteran forwards left? And I think they can, but it's not a given because of the fact that most of these players, or all of these players, first of all, one of the players he's talking about is Bermi. Bermi wasn't in the NHL last year.
Sure.
So, Bermistrov is not a rookie, but he wasn't in the NHL last year. So, Bermistrov, though, is, again, a wild card because, first off, we don't know where he's playing. And that's not to say that NHL teams around the league and hockey teams in general don't have question marks going into the season. But I think that, for people that are listening, the reasons why we have so many concerns is because the NHL is a man's league. And when you have so many rookies... And not only the rookies, we've said this before, because the Jets are generally a young team anyways, Mark Scheifele, Jacob Trouba, Adam Lowry, these are all guys that are in their second and third years in the league, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a young team already. But that's the concern, is this team going to be able to get it all together? Because as we know, guys, the Jets have a tough schedule. Start with 4 games on the road. They have 10 of 14 on the road in November.
Well, they play in the hardest division in hockey.
Well, they play in the hardest division in hockey that got better. Colorado got better. Dallas got better.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, I mean, these are valid concerns. None of us are saying that the Jets are going to tank this year. That's not at all what we're saying. I mean, we're concerned here. And I think, you know, you look at the preseason, and nobody's lit it up, guys. I mean, Ehlers has had some good chances, but nobody's, I mean.
But Mark Scheifele lit it up in his first preseason, too, and then when the game started, they had to send him back down to junior because he wasn't ready.
Preseason pretty meaningless, but I think there's a asterisk in terms of the word rookie. Because rookie, when it's Gustav Nyquist or when it's Thomas Tatar, guys who've been
three years in the system
and different things like that, and they've proved themselves at the AHL, Grand Rapids.
We're talking about pro rookie.
You're talking like rookie eligible now. Sometimes eligible still to go back. Eligible still to go back to junior, or have played in junior, haven't played in the AHL aside from maybe a cup of coffee at the end of a season when they're eligible to do so. So I mean, there's a difference in the term rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Right, sometimes it's an older rookie. You're talking younger rookies. You don't know. You just don't know if it's tested, if they're tested or not. And there's a reason. For example, Mark Scheifele comes into camp this year, puts on 15 pounds of muscle. I mean, it takes time to put on all that muscle and craft your body a certain way
to become
when
a
you
man.
Are 20 exactly. Yeah. When you are 23, 22, 23, 24 years old, you can't do that all at 19.
And it's one thing if you want to plug these rookies, these young players, into your lineup, if you want to ease them into fourth line roles. You know, a lot of these guys aren't going to get eased in. Alex Burmistrov and Nikolaj Ehlers, if they make the team, aren't going to be eased into the fourth line because the Jets need them to be playing top 9 minutes. I mean, you look at the roster, there's nobody else to fill those holes.
Well, for Burmistrov, you don't need to ease. He's old enough.
Yeah, fine.
It's the other guys.
But there's no learning curve.
The question is he talented enough? Talented in a different way. We know he has skill. Is he talented enough to play in a top six, top nine role and create a lot of offense?
How many games in Mark Scheifele's rookie season in the NHL, and this was after he had exhausted all of his junior eligibility, How many games until you really thought that he looked like he could handle playing against men? 60? It was a long time. I mean, the game that jumps to mind, the first time you said you sort of noticed him, I think it was a game in Buffalo, if I'm not mistaken. I guess this is how many years ago? 3 years ago now. Mm-hmm. There was a game in Buffalo where him and Kane, Evander Kane, combined and had some nice magic together, and I think they scored, either had a goal and an assist each or something along those lines. And that was the first time in that season where you stopped counting, you know, Scheifele down, where he would fall, you know, on the ice like
a young
bam,
player.
With a young player. And this isn't a criticism. This is just a function of you're 20 years old and you don't have the body going up against a 27-year-old or a 26-year-old who's 6'2" and 220 pounds.
It doesn't mean that, you know, you'll see, you know, the storyline in the NHL these days now is it's the middle class players having trouble cracking, you know, making any money. They're getting PTOs and usually would have got some money, and teams are moving with young players. We're not saying that they aren't moving with young players,
mm-hmm.
but it's the idea of moving with young players in big roles. That's a different factor, you know. And I'm not saying sometimes it doesn't work out. You look at the guy like, you know, Sean Monahan and different guys like that who've really succeeded.
Sure.
Young players. Now, granted, these are top picks that are going up there, big time skill level. I mean, you can't compare Connor McDavid to what we're talking about here. Different ball game.
But you look at Nathan MacKinnon last year. Nathan MacKinnon 2 years ago.
No, Nathan MacKinnon last year, if you watched him, he missed Paul Stastny, but he changed the way he played. He was trying to play too selfish of a manner, and he was not sharing the puck, and he was playing with tunnel vision. And yeah, he had struggled. Second year in the league, top talent.
First overall pick.
Yeah, great talent. Great talent. I mean, the way he skates with the puck. But yeah, you're right, Drew. I mean, there's some learning curves.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, and the learning curves are almost constant throughout a player's career. At some point in time, it clicks in, mm-hmm. and they can, you know, and they can be that top player. But, you know, when the best of the best struggle in new situations, you know, Nathan MacKinnon, rookie season, great. Paul Stastny obviously had a lot to do with that. Paul Stastny goes away because this is a business. He goes to St. Louis. Nathan MacKinnon isn't ready.
They both struggle. Yeah.
Paul Stastny struggled in St. Louis too, but that's sort of the aside. But Nathan MacKinnon, a guy who you would think of anybody in the NHL should be able to handle without, you know, playing in a different role without that veteran influence, isn't able to do it. The Jets are asking an awful lot of these players to be able to step in and be, you know, to have that many contributions to the lineup and get them back to the heights that they were at last year.
I think, you know, we talked earlier about Perreault playing, it's early, but Perreault playing with Ehlers, you said, you know, through mm-hmm. a few games. Ezzy, that's an interesting one because you've mentioned it before. If they do say stick together, who plays in the top six?
And all of these reasons are why we're concerned about the Jets going into the playoffs.
Where?
I don't know, on the wing?
On the right wing?
I mean, Ladd and Little? I don't know. I mean, I don't have an answer because, you know, there isn't one that's readily apparent.
Now, a lot of teams have questions. Let's qualify it. You know, in this day and age, with this, you know, it's been 10 years, so 11 years. With the cap, every team's going to have questions.
Channeling your inner Shovel Day off there.
I can't handle that. Yeah. You're going to have questions. With the cap, you're going to have questions. Nobody's going to have a stacked team, really. Rarely are you going to have a stacked team. The questions you want to have lower down on your roster, right?
Yeah, I think so. And that's not to say that we don't think Nikolaj Ehlers has a promising young career ahead of him.
Oh, for sure.
Of course
it's,
he does.
It's just that it's to be expected that he will have his struggles. It's to be expected Andrew Kopp will have his struggles. I like both of these players a lot. You guys know that? I think I just said that earlier. I think Andrew Kopp has been one of the most impressive young forwards for this team. That's why I think he'll make the team. And I think there's no reason to believe that he won't have a good first year. But it's will these guys be able to all put it together and work with the team and get back to the playoffs? I think that's what the issue is here for all of us. And
here's the key for me. How old is Andrew Kopp?
21.
21.
Yeah.
Different game.
Well, absolutely. And you could argue that maybe he should spend a year in the AHL, but they believe he's ready. And the Jets management and player development and the coaches, these guys make the decision, so they obviously know what they're doing. But that's what we're talking about here, Drew. And the Central Division, I mean, it's pretty unanimous that it's the best division in hockey. Five teams made it last year out of seven. So, I mean, it's going to be tough. I think you look at it half glass full and you say, well, Nikolaj Ehlers, if he does anything close to what Johnny Gaudreau did last year, and as long as Andrew Kopp is solid and he's, you know, responsible and, you know, he is basically doing what Paul Maurice tells him to do, there's no reason to think this team won't get back in the playoffs.
The difference with Andrew Kopp is, I mean, you know, obviously if the only things we were discussing was, you know, the Jets battle for the fourth line positions, it would be a different conversation entirely. The Jets relied so little on their fourth line last season. You know, they played in, what, 6 minutes a game?
Yeah, until the end of the season. I mean, they really weren't, until they had some depth at the end after the deadline, they really weren't relying on them at all. They hardly played them. Yeah.
They hardly played them. So, I mean, if the situation, you know, if Andrew Kopp comes in and is only, you know, struggles a little bit or has a learning curve and only is good for 6 minutes a game, but the team's used to that.
Well, that's exactly right, Drew. That's a great point. And when you get down to it, the fourth line guys, the team made the playoffs last year basically, as you're saying, without a fourth line.
Yeah.
For the most part. So, if they get anything better than that, they should be okay, and Paul Maurice should give the other guys a bit of a rest. And that hurts you down the stretch, and later on, if you make it in the playoffs, you get tired because you've played your bigger guys so much.
But if
it's the third line. We've talked about possibly who's going to play there, and then if you're going to try and insulate a little bit on the third line, who slips into the top six to play there, right? Because if you're going to put Lowry with Perreault and Ehlers, so then you're putting a rookie on the third line right wing. And then who are you putting in the top six? If it's Stafford, Scheifele, and Wheeler, who's playing with Ladd and a little? Is it Burmistrov, or is Burmistrov playing a fourth line role with another rookie and a vet? Then you're only working a couple rookies in there, but who's playing with the big boys? I mean, that's the thing. It's when you get to the big lines.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it happens to be, and I still think it's possible, Stafford is a natural right winger, moves over back to the right side, and they move Perreault up. And then they try and put a younger player in a third line. But again, still, top nine, if you're playing that many young players. That's why at the top of the segment, and then we got to go here, the top of the segment, you sense in Paul Maurice's voice, oh, I guess we're going to do this.
Doesn't have another option right now. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss the Jets potentially had interest in Christopher Stieg. We'll continue looking over the lines, and we'll talk about the defense as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hello. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our friends at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, we spent the first 35 or so minutes of this morning's program looking at the forward group. What about the defense? Less, obviously, spots that the people are battling for there, and that the Jets have a number of players on one-way contracts. Mm-hmm. Question really is, it has to do with Josh Morrissey. You know, through three games of the preseason, he hasn't played in all of them, of course. Have you seen anything from Josh Morrissey that tells you he's going to make this team out of training camp, or that he's going to end up starting in the AHL with the Moose?
Yeah, we should mention Josh Morrissey's played two preseason games. He played with Jay Harrison yesterday, and in the first preseason game, he played with Brendan Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Josh Morrissey should be in the AHL this year, and it's obviously not my decision, but based on what I've seen in the preseason and going back to last year when he was still with Kelowna in the WHL, and based on the other defensemen that are currently under contract, so you're talking about nine defensemen under one-way contracts. Adam Party, Paul Postma, Jay Harrison are in there too, in addition to the, you know, the big six with Myers, Buff, Trouba, Stewart, Enstrom, and Sherratt. So you're talking about nine defensemen that are ahead of him right now on the depth chart just because they're all on one-way contracts. So I would say that, you know, I haven't seen enough out of Josh Morrissey. And I think that, you know, talking to a few people at the game last night, I think, you know, you look at Josh Morrissey and he was drafted 14th overall in 2013. And I think because of where he was drafted, maybe there are higher expectations, Richie, of someone. I think, and that goes for anybody who is a first round pick because of the kind of prestige that goes with it.
Sure.
Especially when you're a top 10, top 15 pick.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And you see defensemen, again, I sound like a broken record when I come on the show every week and say this, but ask anybody in the hockey world and they'll tell you defensemen take longer to mature. So there's nothing wrong with Josh Morrissey at 20 years old playing the AHL. And then maybe he gets the crack in the NHL this year. And again, not saying that Josh Morrissey won't play at all in the NHL this year. I'm just saying I would, based on my observations, mm-hmm. think that he's going to play the majority of this season for the Manitoba Moose. They're going to be able to watch him, keep track of him, see how he develops. And I think, you know, a couple years from now, then you'll see him as a regular in the NHL. But I haven't seen enough out of him offensively. And I think, you know, he was getting beat off the puck a little bit yesterday as well. I think, you know, he still needs to, you know, keep putting weight on and just learning how to play, you know, a heavier game, Rich. So a guy like Morrissey, to me, you know, even though I was looking at him to kind of possibly push, mm-hmm. maybe a guy like Ben Sherratt. Ben Sherratt's played better. Got another goal yesterday. I mean, Ben Sherratt has really impressed me. He's been one of the most impressive defensemen for me, period, for the Jets.
The other aspect, Ezzy, on the Sherratt point is, I mean, he puts in a couple goals in the preseason or not. They don't really need offense from the back end. They just need sturdy defensive play.
Mm-hmm. Like, they have enough offense.
Myers, they have Buffon, yeah. They have Enstrom, right?
Yeah.
So if he can give them solid left-side defensive play, that's what they're looking for. I just don't see, there's no room for Morrissey. And with so many injuries last year and injuries that are, you know, happen on an annual basis, you'll probably see him play games in the National Hockey League this year. But I do agree. I think that'll start the season in the AHL. And I think that's the right play. I agree with Ezzy. I don't think he's dominated and played his way onto the team and cracked somebody else out of the roster. And the truth is, this is fine for his development. He's played his maximum CHL career in the WHL, and he's going to move to the AHL, learn how to play the pro game, learn how to defend against men. He's a smaller guy. He needs to be able to learn how to defend along the boards and some decision-making things that'll come to be against bigger players who are able to challenge him differently than he was challenged in the WHL, and certainly it's a faster game. And you let him develop with the Moose. I don't think there's any problem with that at all. Again, as he mentioned at the top, and he's right, you know, first-round pick in 2013, with that comes a lot of expectations, but there is no reason, especially based on the roster construction, to rush him right now.
And Drew, to add to that point, when Jacob Trouba came into Jets training camp, well, they signed him towards the end of his last year with the University of Michigan, but when he came into training camp that year, and the way he looked, the way he practiced, the way he played in preseason, he was a step above where Josh Morrissey's at.
I agree.
So, and I think it was pretty clear to everyone that Jacob Trouba was a step above him, and I think that's why Jacob Trouba is ahead of him in the development curve. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Josh Morrissey's 20 years old.
That's right.
I mean, he's very young still. You got to keep that in mind here.
That's our point of last segment. Yeah. I mean, you know, give him some time.
Yeah.
Let him develop. Again, there's going to be exceptions to this rule. I mean, Nikolai Ehlers is exceptionally talented. He could be an exception with that talent level. Jacob Trouba is exceptionally gifted skater who plays a mean style. He plays a man's game at a young age. He does. He plays a man's game at a young age. But those are,
and he had a man's body at a younger age. I mean, he's still going to fill out, but he didn't look like a kid. He looked like a man.
Strength
on the
was
ice.
Not an issue for him. Mm-hmm. You know, Morrissey needs to work on strength, and there's only so much room you can put on a 5'10", 5'11" guy. But guys, you know, Trouba is a special player. It's a great draft pick, and there not every player is like that. Yeah. Can't treat every player the same.
Well, I mean, you know, with all due, I mean, Jim Slater, mm-hmm. you know, no longer with the team. Jim Slater was a first-round pick.
30th overall, but yeah.
30th overall, yeah. But he was a first-round pick. So, I mean, you're right when you say, Ezzy, that just being a first-round pick has some cachet attached
That's right.
to it.
That's fair.
But there are different levels of first-round picks, and there's different qualities of draft class. So if you're the first-round pick, you know, in a great draft class and you're taking 10th overall, it's a lot different than if you're a first-round pick, you know, taking, you know, 13th overall in a lousy draft.
Let's talk pressure, though.
Okay.
There really isn't any pressure on Josh Morrissey to make the team.
No, of course not.
And that's for the better, I think.
He can personally. Go into the... I mean, he knows the AHL game in his stints in at the end of the
short
season.
Stints. But if he... One of
them wasn't that short when they went to the Calder Cup Finals.
I appreciate that. But at the end of such a long season, having played in the World Junior, I mean, the player's not the same he's going to be when he's fresh.
He's played like 100 games that year.
And I agree with Rich, but I mean, you know, like Josh Morrissey would tell you, he obviously wants to play in the NHL.
Well, no, of course, but I'm saying the pressure.
No,
he has to hit a grand slam to make the team. Like, he has to dominate.
You have to say that because it's not to say that he isn't putting pressure on himself. You're saying that the pressure from the team and just the pressure is different.
Well,
for a guy like Josh Morris, and you know, back to
it's a different. You know, can I get in quickly? It's a different approach, though, right? Like they signed Party, they have Harrison. They traded for Harrison last year, but they have these guys on 1 year deals who are. I mean, you can dispose of it if you need to because they're on short contracts that don't pay a lot of money. But they didn't take that approach of forward. Now, maybe they think of forward, they have different talent levels. But Josh Morrissey, first-round pick, you know, Nick Petan, second-round pick. It's just a different approach on the same team, different positions, mind you, but a little bit odd.
They were confident. You know, they were more confident in their young forwards of being able to step up than they were necessarily about their young defensemen necessarily being able to step up, and that's why they have more defensive depth now than they do at forward.
You know, on the topic of where players are drafted, I wish people would look at where players are drafted afterwards, after the draft, and just completely almost like take a deck of cards and shuffle them around. Connor Hellebuck's a 5th-round pick. Henrik Zetterberg is a 7th-round pick. Andre Palat was a 6th-round pick. I mean, where you're drafted doesn't matter. And that speaks more to the point where just because a player was drafted 13th or 14th overall doesn't necessarily mean they're going to step right into the NHL and be a number one defenseman. I mean, Aaron Ekblad can do it. Jacob Trouba could do it.
That's right.
But, I mean, it's just not going to happen. So I think, unfortunately, you know, the expectations seem to always be higher. Well, and I think we have to look at it like if Josh Morrissey plays most of the year in the AHL, that is not a bad thing.
Sure. And plays well. It certainly would. There's no downside to that.
It's another step in the development. That's all it is. I know.
Mentioned Jonathan Drouin earlier in the show. It was healthy scratch in the Stanley Cup Finals. You know, didn't play very much for John Cooper in the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Even if Josh Morrissey plays 2 years in the AHL,
so be it.
I wouldn't freak out. I mean, it's just, you know, certain players are ready to step right into the NHL. No, I'm not. And again, I'm not saying that he won't be in the NHL next year or play some time in the. I'm just saying, I mean, it's. I think, you know, back to the question, I think that was one of the position battles that we thought might be a little more competitive. But it turns out the Jets' defense is pretty set in stone, especially with the way I think Ben Sherrod has played.
That's fair.
Set to break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the goaltending, more about the Winnipeg Jets training camp. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, Saturday morning, a beautiful Saturday morning. What is it, 27 degrees? Is that what they're saying the high is going to be today? That's pretty good.
Supposed
pretty
to be
good
pretty nice, Drew.
For end of September.
Cool sunset last night.
I missed that. Was it a cool sunset?
It was.
Were you out on the patio last night, Mr. Pollock?
Yeah, you know, it was a cool sunset. Also a cool sunrise this morning.
You were up bright and early.
Yeah, you got to get prepared for the show, Drew. Got to read about all the players' measurables.
Oh, their measurables. The measurables or their trackables?
I don't know. Same thing.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome back to the program. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Pretty excited about the return.
Yeah.
The Illegal Curve sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was thrilled to get some emails from you guys regarding that. That's going to be debuted on the season premiere of NHL Midweek, coming up in about 10 days' time, give or take, on Wednesday, October 7th. NHL Midweek, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. here on TSN 1290. We'll be with you every Wednesday, as we always are during the regular season. And we will debut, as we said, the Illegal Curve sandwich and the prototypes of the sandwich. Very impressive.
Isn't it going to be an actual sandwich?
I can't spoil it.
It's not a 3D printer. Like.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic.
Are we going to be eating the sandwich every midweek show?
Probably. I just assume.
Okay. Okay. By the way, also, thank you for bringing these little cupcakes into the studio.
You're welcome. Actually, you can thank Laura's mom. Laura's mom purchased those, and then we had some
the listeners who Laura is.
Laura's my wife. I think they all know. Names. Yes. Yeah. Well, I think at this point in time, most of them know. Laura's my wife. Her mom's in town, obviously, to help with the baby, so she brought some cupcakes, and we had some leftovers, so they said, share it with the boys.
Thank you to Laura's.
Both Ezzie and Richie, she said, Ezzie and Richie look like they're starving. They haven't had enough cupcakes recently.
She hasn't seen my belly recently.
Or ever, and let's hope it stays
thank
that way.
Thank you to Laura's mom.
Yeah, Charlotte.
And Richie, are you going to offer Rory one, or you got that box pretty close to you there.
I'll share. This looks like there's an Imperial in here.
Yeah, you can share the cupcakes here, Richie. Elliot Friedman reporting that the Jets were interested and took a long look at acquiring Chris Versteeg from the Chicago Blackhawks. That report surprised you? Obviously, he ended up going to Carolina.
For nothing.
They had to clear the salary to sign Marcus Kruger. That's why they made that trade.
Yeah, absolutely. The Blackhawks certainly needed to clear the salary to sign Marcus Kruger, who had been an RFA.
Right.
Given that it cost the Blackhawks or the Hurricanes effectively nothing to acquire him, are you surprised the Jets didn't actually pull the trigger on that?
Well, I'm not surprised to hear that, Richie, that they were interested in Chris Versteeg. If you remember Chris Versteeg when he was with Florida, he was killing the Jets. If you go back to those games, I think it was the lockout year. Remember that? And Chris Versteeg was lighting it up. But, I mean, Chris Versteeg is a player that's been frustrating to watch over his career. You know, he picked up another Stanley Cup ring last year. Didn't play much, Richie.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he had 14 goals in the NHL last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 14 goals in the NHL, you look at the number of players that do it, it's still impressive. You know, considering that, you know, there are the players that score 50 and 60 goals are few and far between, right? There's only a handful of them. So it's not surprising because we've talked about it. We thought that the Jets might bring in another veteran. And, you know, that's really going to be the storyline here going into the regular season and continuing in the preseason. Like, where is the offense going to come from? And a guy like Chris Versteeg, even though, you know, he struggles with his defensive commitments, Rich, and he's kind of one of those players sometimes that lacks discipline, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a guy that, you know, that he's a sniper. He can score goals. He's proven that. He's not a 40-goal guy, but he's a bona fide, you know, 20-goal guy. He's done it a few times in the NHL. So not surprised to hear, and especially to Chevy being a former assistant GM with the Hawks.
Right?
He has the familiarity with Chris Versteeg when he was there.
That's right. You know, you look at the moves that are made, a lot of the time it's based on familiarity, like Toulouse with Paul Maurice knowing about Yuri Tulusti and here Versteeg, as he mentioned.
Frolik coming here to begin with out of Chicago.
And then here's a guy like Versteeg. Now we're talking about Chris Versteeg. If they really wanted him, they could have had him. I mean, if they were talking about pieces, I mean, they actually gave up, the Hawks gave up a higher pick than they got back as part of the package.
Just to dump the salary.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're talking money, is if the Jets want to take on money. Otherwise, it wasn't really much of a deal. So if they wanted the player, I mean, he's not very fast, he's not very big, but he's smart. He's got pretty good hands. How is he in the room? Maybe not great, but Ladd and Buff and those guys know him. So, sure, would it have been an option? Yeah, and, you know, and you put him on the right side, then there you go on the right side of your third line, and you know, you don't get any, you get short, slower and smaller, but you get smarter and more skilled.
Slower and
smaller.
Smaller and smarter.
Slower, smaller, smarter, and
okay, that's kay. Mouthful.
And yeah, I did it though, and then you confused me after.
Okay, I wanted to see if you could get the tongue twister going.
Enough with the alliteration.
But that's you know, what would it have been again? A veteran player better than what's currently there, or at least insulating what's currently in Winnipeg? Yeah. So I think it was an option. Now, granted, there's a bunch of players on PTOs that have been available. Maybe they aren't as good as Versteeg, but they're not that much worse than him. That also could have been invited. So.
And the thing about a PTO is, I mean, if something was to happen and a player was to get injured during training camp and you want to sign somebody, you can just offer them a contract even though they're in somebody else's training camp under a PTO.
And two guys that we talked about as being possibilities for the Jets, I believe are going to get signed. I think Brad Boyes and Curtis Glencross will play for the Leafs this year.
I think the Leafs will trade them for a second or a third round pick at the trade deadline and turn a nothing acquisition into a decent asset.
Same argument, though, applies for the Toronto Maple Leafs in a sense, even though the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think we would agree, are not as good of a team as the Winnipeg Jets right now. Mitch Marner and William Nylander are too young for the NHL right now. So I think that's why you got to have guys like Curtis Glencross and Brad Boyes playing in your top nine.
Well, sure, because, I mean, yeah. But the Leafs, again, are like the, you know, the Leafs don't have any expectations. The Jets, you know, unfortunately, quote unquote, have expectations because they made the playoffs last season. So, you know, would people be shocked if they took a bit of a step back? Probably not. Probably not. But are people going to, you know, people do have expectations now. And that's, you know.
Is that a bad thing?
No, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's what comes with winning and with having success is that people get expectations. It's the reason why nobody expects anything from the Bombers. It's because they haven't won in 25 years.
And right. I think, too, you know, speaking of a veteran, I think that's because of the void that was left by Michael Frolik. You can say whatever you want about Michael Frolik. And, I think, you know, you could sit here and say, is he a $3 million formula? Forget the money for a second. Michael Frolik is an excellent player, and he has the ability to play on any line, really. Fourth line, third line, for the most part, it was one of the top three lines, Drew.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he's a really good hockey player. And there's a reason why he was part of that Cup team. He wasn't a passenger on that Cup team. I mean, he played there.
Mm-hmm.
And and Paul Maurice liked him. And, you know, Rich has always said, you know, he was the, I guess we could call him the Czech Army knife. Not the Swiss Army knife, but he was kind of that guy.
Well played.
Michael Frolik could play on the power play, Drew.
Hang on, does the Czech Army carry knives?
But you know what I mean, though, Drew? Back to the point, though. I mean, Michael Frolik's loss is significant. I mean, the Calgary Flames, I mean, there's a reason why a lot of fans here were upset about that. The guy's a really good hockey player. Sure, he might only be a 45-50-point guy, but he's an excellent 45-50-point guy that does more than just provide offense. Well,
he
and that's, to me,
provides
why
a coach with confidence because he knows he can put him in different situations and he has flexibility, which is why there's probably a little bit of an unease surrounding Paul Maurice in terms of who's going to fill the spots.
And again, if Alexander Burmistrov can replace some of the things that Michael Frolik did, because I don't think he's going to replace all of them. I don't think Burmistrov's as good of a player as Frolik, to be quite honest with you. I think that they should be fine. And then Ehlers and Kopp, you know, if they provide some of the offense that was left by guys like Stempniak and Tulusti and Jimmy Slater, then I think the Jets should be fine. But the Central Division's tough. And you know, I worry that, especially early on in the season, you know, with a lot of the road games, as I mentioned in the first segment, I worry that, you know, there's going to be some struggles and the Jets might fall out of a playoff spot early on.
I mean, the fair point, Ezzy, that you make there, too, is you are starting off on the road first four games, and you're not going to get the matchups you want.
Mm-hmm.
It's tougher to insulate over those first. Again, it's only four games, but it is tougher to give these guys protection, young guys, in situations that you want them when you don't have last chance.
Yeah, you go on the road. If you come home 2-2 in those first four on the road, you're going to take that.
You expect to win
in New Jersey because you're better than New Jersey. It might be better than Boston. I mean, Boston's given their defense, given their blue line injuries.
I think you're better than Boston.
I think you're better than Boston. Yeah. You know, the Rangers, you know, you're not better than the Rangers, and who knows about the Islanders.
You're not better than the Islanders.
Yeah, you're not better than them. I mean,
You're probably better than two of those four teams. Rangers and Islanders are better. Maybe the Rangers take a step back this year. I think the Islanders are a very good team, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's all going to come to a head. Next Saturday, of course, our NHL season preview show will look 3 hours. The entire NHL will get you set for puck drop, which is only really 10 days away here on the start of the 2015-16 season. As we head to break, when we come back for the final 2 hours of the program, we do this each and every year. How many years is this now that we've been doing this?
I think it's five.
Is this our fifth year?
Yeah.
It's our fifth annual Illegal Curve Fantasy Hockey Preview Show. 2 hours getting you set for your hockey pool, which is definitely coming up in the next 10 days. We'll tell you who to draft, who not to draft, who's a sleeper, who's a bust, everything under the sun related to fantasy hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside my colleague/analyst, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Rory doing a fantastic job getting us on and off the air.
Could you not say friends?
I could say friends. I think they know by now that you know.
I'd like to think that we're friends. Can we be friends?
We can be friends.
Okay.
This segment of the program brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Gentlemen, the start of the Fantasy Hockey Preview Show begins now. For the record, just, you know, there's all sorts of different formats available to be used for fantasy hockey, of course. For the purposes of our conversation, we're going to go with a straight goals are worth 1 point, assists are worth 1 point sort of style format.
We'll touch on the other ones
throughout the show, but, you know, generally speaking, our conversation is rooted with that as the overall umbrella of the strategy that we're going to use. Last season, Jamie Benn of the Dallas Stars led the NHL with 87 points in 82 games played. Sidney Crosby, usually the perennial first overall pick in a fantasy pool, 84 points in 77 games played. That was third overall in the NHL. Is Crosby, again, your clear-cut number one pick?
I mean, I don't think it's clear-cut anymore, Drew, but he'd be not my number one pick, and I think the reason for that is because you've now added skill to the wings. Kessel end up playing with Crosby? Well, obviously he had some success the other night there, but I think he'll be playing with him on the power play in any event, and I think that'll help. Adding a sniper, adding a guy who can score, you know, doesn't need the puck all the time, has good speed. I think that enhances the value of Sidney Crosby, and I think Sidney Crosby also had a little bit of an off year for him. I know the point totals are just so low now in the National Hockey League; it's embarrassing. But
I think they'll be higher this year.
Yeah, and I think Crosby has a rebound year, and I do think that he would be my number one pick.
Yeah, and you know, it's you forget with Jamie Benn, he had 13 points in the last five games.
Yeah, Tavares was.
And Tavares tore it up towards the end too. Yeah, Crosby missed five games too. I would say that Sidney Crosby is the number one overall pick, and I would say that I'm taking Alexander Ovechkin probably second, and you can make a strong argument because his goal totals, Richie, are double his assist totals. If he gets those assist totals up a little bit, you know, Alexander Ovechkin could end up leading the league with, you know, 90, 95 points, 100 points maybe this year, because he only had 28 assists last year. So, you know, it was great to see Jamie Benn win the scoring title last year, especially with Dallas struggling for most of the season and then coming on towards the end of the season. And, you know, Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, I think, are really both have to go number one in your fantasy pool. And we should mention, as you mentioned, that we're basing this just on straight points. Mm-hmm. Some pools, I know Richie and I every year go in a big pool where goals are worth two, but we're basing this just on straight points, just to simplify it, especially for some of the folks that might be listening who are just in fun office pools and stuff like that. So I think, especially with the first round, Drew, I think what you also have to consider is kind of historical numbers. And for me, a guy that I think will get back, maybe not necessarily the top five, top 10, but for sure top 15, guy like Corey Perry. Corey Perry struggled last year. He had the illness, missed some games. Mm-hmm. So you have to also look at it like, just because, you know, the top 10, top 15 looks a certain way doesn't necessarily mean you can just kind of duplicate it next year, because it's always different. You have certain guys that are consistently in the top 10. You're talking over the last five, six, whatever years, Rich, you're talking the Tavareses, the Crosbys, the Ovechkins, you know, players like this. The Sedins, you know, were both kind of around, I don't know what they were, top seventh or eighth or whatever.
Daniel finished eighth with 76 points. Henrik finished 10th with 73 points.
The year before that,
they were much
lower. They were in the 50s.
Yeah.
So you have to also factor that in, that, you know, the players, obviously Torts had a rough year there a couple of years ago, but you have to factor that in, Richie. And then the year before, Getzlaff was right up there leading the league in points, and he struggled a little bit. Getzlaff is a guy, to me, I you guys know I really like Getzlaff and Perry, so I think those guys will most likely, their numbers will be up. I really like Anaheim. You look at that defense, Rich. That defense can get these guys the puck. So I think you got to look at, I would, if you're kind of new to hockey pools, I would look at, you know, and NHL.com is a great site. You can look at previous years and kind of go over
Jensen from NHL.com is going to join us coming up later on in this hour.
We'll talk to him about that, but I would look at the kind of the last 3, 4, 5 years when you're talking about the top forwards, and really just in general, because you kind of see trends and players that had bad years. And, you know, a guy like Yuri Hudler, for example, kind of came out of nowhere and finished ninth in the league in scoring with 76 points. So, you know, I think there's players every year that are going to kind of creep up from kind of being tier two forwards to tier one forwards.
Sure.
But for the most part, Richie, I think you're going to see year after year a similar group of players be up there. Like, you know, John Tavares is going to be top 10.
Let me ask you guys this. Given that we talked about, you know, earlier in the segment, we said scoring is down, and it was down last year across the NHL quite dramatically. I mean, we spoke last year throughout the season that it wasn't a great year for hockey.
It'll be up a little this year. I'll give you two reasons why.
Okay, that was going to be my question.
One, Connor McDavid. Two, 3-on-3 overtime. And also, I think that just generally speaking, it was just a bad year for scoring, just like injuries. You know, some top players were injured. I'm not saying, you know, goal scoring is going to go up by a full goal a game.
No.
But I wouldn't be surprised if it goes up half a goal a game.
But looking at the numbers last year of the, you know, the top 10, the top 15.
Might be a bold statement, Richie.
The top 10, the top 15 players in the league last year. Is it realistic to expect that your first round pick in a hockey pool will average a point a game at this point?
Well, look at the stats last year. I mean, average a point a game, sure, but Drew, it's all proportionate, right? If he's not playing 82 games, then you're not cracking that 82-point barrier.
I mean, Daniel Sedin finished eighth overall in the NHL, and he played all 82 games. You know, Nicholas Backstrom played all 82 games last year, and he was less than a point a game also. He finished sixth. Jakub Voracek.
I know.
Fourth overall, less than a point a game. I mean, is it realistic nowadays?
Not really. To expect all of the top 10. If you have a 10-team pool or 12-team pool, or if, you know, I don't think there's more than we have a 14-team baseball pool. That's rare. 10 to 12-team pool, you're not going to get top point of game likely on every pick of the first round.
Yeah, and I think that goes to show, I mean, you know, the era of the Gretzky rule in a fantasy hockey pool is long gone.
Yes.
Where, you know, either you couldn't take Gretzky because he was so far ahead of everyone else, or he counted as two selections. You know,
one for goals, one for assists.
Yeah, one for goals, one for assists.
Well, just for some of the younger listeners out there, I mean, Richie loves...
Wayne Gretzky was a player who played for the Oilers.
No, but Richie loves when I bring this up. You know, we had some friends, you know, we have a hockey pool every year, and some friends that are a little older that were older than us when Gretzky was in his prime in the mid-80s. And some hockey pools, you used to take Gretzky's goals and you used to take Gretzky's assists. Mm-hmm. One person got Gretzky's goals and Gretzky's assists.
Just said that. Literally just said that.
Oh, I wasn't listening.
We know you weren't listening. He literally just said that.
I mean, Twitter is a hell of a thing.
Put down your phone and you would be able to listen to the program.
It's funny because usually
at least you admit that you weren't listening.
No, no, no. I admit when I wasn't listening. But it's funny, Rich, because usually I kind of half listen, and I didn't hear that at all.
Well, so. You weren't listening with either of your ears in that instance. No.
So needless to say that
Yuri Hoodler.
Yeah.
Finished ninth overall
last
year.
Let's talk about Yuri Hoodler.
Yuri Hoodler finished ninth overall last year.
Yeah.
You know, how do you take a player like him? That's an outlier of a season.
It's an outlier of a season. Sure. Let's break it down. It's an outlier of a season. However, who does he play with?
Sure.
He plays with Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan. The assumption would be that Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan are going to get better or be just as good. Now, you want to look at some reasons for his maybe extreme success. He had 31 goals when before that he never scored more than 25. Okay. But, you know, when he scored in almost 20% of his shots, that's one thing people look at, shooting percentage. But his career shooting percentage is 15. So 19, he's about 4.5% over his career shooting percentage. So that drops down a bit. Maybe he gets less goals. Likely gets less goals. And 76 points is, you know, he basically a point a game last year. So do you expect that from him? Not necessarily. However, if he plays on that line, and if you watch the chemistry of that line, and they keep that group together, maybe he gets 65. That's still a darn good season. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's not a top 10 pick, but I mean, if he's falling out of your third or fourth rounds, you're probably undervaluing him.
Yeah, a player like Yuri Hoodler has been a consistent 50-55 point guy going back to his days as a Detroit Red Wing, Rich. So yeah, I think it might be a bit of an outlier, Drew, to expect him to get 76 points and be a top 10 scorer again. But I agree with Rich. I think, you know, to expect him to get 60 to 65 points is realistic. And Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau, by the way, I don't think are going to take a step back just on that topic. They had excellent years. Sean Monahan his second year and Johnny Gaudreau his rookie year. I think those players will be right around those goal totals, point totals. Those are tier two forwards, though. I don't think I'd take those players in a first round of a pool. And again, usually in hockey pools, you're 10 or 15 teams max. So you're talking 15, 20 players, right?
Sure.
So I probably wouldn't take Gaudreau or Monahan or Hoodler in the first round, but I would be pretty safe to say that those guys will all be around the 50 to 70 point range as second round picks. Calgary's a great team. And I mean, you talk about some of the offense and Mark Giordano arguably wins the Norris if he stays healthy. I know I'm getting to the defenseman
here.
Yeah,
we'll talk about defensemen.
But that's something to factor in, too, when you have one of the top defensemen in the league getting you the puck and the power play and all that. So Hoodler was one of those guys that you didn't expect to be in the top 10, but he had an excellent year. He's a great player.
The thing you have with that line, I'm going to talk about those guys, and I think they probably slide into third to fifth round range, is that skill playing with skill, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you think Ovechkin's the number one pick overall and you're a little bit leery about Backstrom's hip, right, it's a hip. I always forget.
It's a hip. Yeah.
Then you might say, oh, maybe a couple picks less, because we're not sure about arguably the best passer in the game.
Because Backstrom's his trigger man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him and Crosby, arguably the two best passers in the game.
One other player I wanted to ask you about, Steven Stamkos, had his worst statistical season.
Yeah.
Where he played the full year. I mean, the year before, obviously, he was injured, but he was still over a point a game. And the year before that was the lockout season where he was well over a point a game. You know, prior to that, 97 points, 91 points, 95 points.
He's a top six pick, Drew.
What accounts for the 72 points in 82 games last season?
Well, I mean,
because anybody who drafted Steven Stamkos,
that's right,
in their top five, because he probably went, you know, top three. He goes first, second, or third,
that's
probably
right,
in a pool. Anybody who takes him last year is disappointed with the 72 points.
I'll answer your question right now, and I think Rich will probably agree. You take Stamkos first round, and you take Stamkos possibly top five. You look at his totals, again, going back to kind of historical data, don't just look at what happened last year. Even though the NHL is what have you done for me lately, he's a point a game, over point a game. So you're talking about a guy that had three 90-point seasons in his first 4 years in the league, his second, third, and fourth years in the league, right? So you're talking about a guy that in the lockout year was well over a point a game. And 72 points in 82 games is not a bad year. But for Steven Stamkos, it is. I think he's, aside from Ovechkin, the best pure goal scorer in the NHL. So I think to expect him to get back up to 85, 90 points is probably realistic. So he's definitely a guy, Drew, that I think you should consider drafting as a tier one first round pick.
So just last year being an outlier in the negative sense of the word.
I mean, this is Steven Stamkos here.
Oh, I know that. I mean, I know it's Steven Stamkos, but
regardless if he's, you know, the triplet line is kind of taken over as the kind of quote unquote 1A line or whatever. I mean, Stamkos is The guy's one of the best players in the league.
And the other aspect of that is he's playing for arguably the biggest free agent contract of all time.
And you think he'll be extra motivated?
Should be.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll answer this question. Where do you take Connor McDavid in your hockey pool? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our fantasy hockey preview show on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Twenty minutes past 10 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, fantasy hockey preview show from now until 12 noon, after which Toronto Blue Jays baseball will be heard live here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba and their 40th annual luncheon. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. That's why the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba is proud to support Habitat for Humanity Winnipeg. And their For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba or to purchase tickets to their 40th anniversary luncheon featuring a keynote address from Rick Frost, CEO of the Winnipeg Foundation, on the topic of sustaining our culture of generosity, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520. Gentlemen, as I asked you before the break, Connor McDavid, Jets fans probably a little disappointed that he didn't play here last night. Think he's going to make his Oilers exhibition debut tonight in Saskatoon as the Oilers play an exhibition game in Saskatchewan. Where do you take Connor McDavid entering in your hockey pool, entering his rookie season in the NHL?
If your pool has a weight for rookies, then he's a first round pick in my opinion. If you need to have a rookie requirement,
as in if there's a mandatory, yeah. Because you guys are in a 28 round pool,
yeah, that has a rookie requirement
that you have to draft a rookie,
yeah. So, I mean, if you have a rookie requirement, I think he's a first-round pick. I think, overall, if you take out the rookie requirement aspect, I have high expectations for him, frankly. I think he's a second-round pick. I think he's a 15 to 20 pick.
Yeah, and obviously that depends on how many teams you have in your pool. What? So if you have 10 teams, maybe you don't take him in the first round. Maybe you do, depending on how high you think his ceiling is.
Well, again, 15 to 20. 15th last year in points was Steven Stamkos. 20th last year was Rick Nash, so it ranged from 72 points to 69 points.
Yeah, and I think he's going to get 70 points.
So you think he's a 70-point player in his rookie season?
Yeah, I do.
He's probably going to be around there. Nathan MacKinnon 2 years ago had 63 points. And so, I think Connor McDavid, you could argue, is potentially a better prospect at this time than Nathan MacKinnon was at the time. And also,
I don't think there's any doubt about it.
I think that you also have to factor in, well, I mean, Nathan MacKinnon was in the top six for the Avalanche, but I mean, Connor McDavid will be, in the top six for the Edmonton Oilers. I think the hype is real, Drew, and I think I think he's a late first rounder, early second rounder, and yeah, there's no reason to believe why he can't be a 70-75 point guy. Connor McDavid averaged 2.55 points in the OHL last year. He had 120 points in 47 games. If he plays a full season, he's probably at 170, 180. That's why we talked about, the Bobby Smith record. He holds the OHL scoring record. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is that good. So I think, if you're going to take Connor McDavid in the first round, I don't think you're going to be unhappy with the pick.
So you can see him being a first-round selection?
Yeah, just because, I mean, there's no reason to believe why he can't do it. And I know Jets fans were a little bit upset they couldn't see him here last night at the MTS Center. But, I mean, this guy is... he's the best prospect since Crosby. I mean, and I'm not the first person to say that. I mean, the guy's on a different level. Like Richie. Richie's on a different level.
There's going to be different angles. There's going to be, first off, you're in a draft, and at the end of the day, it's fun. You want to follow the fun, sexy first pick coming in. So that's an aspect. The other aspect is some people will be more comfortable taking the basically quote-unquote shoe-in in the top of the second round, taking your get slap and saying, I'll see how good he is, and I'll determine that next year where I pick him. That's a risk, who's willing to take a little bit more risk there.
Sure.
The reward, I think, is going to be pretty high. However, and this is not the usual case where you might get a rookie a little later and he surprises people and you get some really good value. I think where he's going to go in drafts isn't going to give you a ton of value because the expectations are so high.
What sort of strategy do you guys employ? Do you look for consistency in a lot of your selections? Are you looking for sort of guys who might boom but also could bust?
You know,
are you willing to take the risk associated with that kind of player as opposed to a guy who's just going to consistently get you, you know, 60 points, let's say? You know, Marian Hossa,
yep,
with the exception of a 77-point season, was 57 points, 60 points, 61 points in the last 4 years.
Right, and for me, my advice always for people that are especially new to hockey pools, but also just people that like to go into hockey pools every year with their friends, the family, coworkers, is to pick a player who's consistent, especially when you get out of the top rounds, but really even in the first round. So, you know, you mentioned Marian Hossa. You know, I put together a couple of other players here, like an Andrzej Kopitar. The last 4 years has been between 64 and 76 points. So to me, he's a safe kind of mid to late second round pick. Or Patrice Bergeron. Last 4 years, he's been in the 55, 65 point range. So you're talking probably like an early third round pick, depending again how many teams are in the pool. I'm basing this on, you know, let's say 10, 12 teams in a hockey pool, right? A Blake Wheeler. The last three seasons, Blake Wheeler, 64, 69, 61. Late second rounder, early third rounder,
Taves,
right?
Taves is in there too, same idea.
Yeah, Jonathan Taves you can throw in there.
68, 66.
I throw in guys like Zetterberg and Datsyuk in there. I don't think they're first round picks, but they're probably second, third round picks. And they're getting a little older, but they're still excellent players. So look at kind of historical data, Drew, because, you know, even though you're going to see a big jump from player, not just one player, but you're going to see players jump up 10, 15, 20, 25 points every year. I think usually the guy that drafts the kind of veteran team of established scorers, mm-hmm, usually that guy wins the hockey pool. And sure, you're going to have, you know, the guy who took Vladimir Tarasenko, for example, last year, who had a crazy career year and signed the 8-year contract. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you took Vladimir Tarasenko in the 7th round last year or something like that, I mean, there's a good chance that you were pretty competitive in your pool. So, I mean, you also have to take players that are on the cusp of a breakout. And we'll ask Pete Jensen of NHL.com because he had a list of breakout candidates up on NHL.com. But also, I think that's something to look at. You shouldn't pick your entire team based on hope.
With so few points on the board now, it's almost like the kind of predictable picks, Ezzy, that you're mentioning are a little bit more safe, because if a guy has a really bad year and gets 40, 30 points, and if you're losing 20 points per spot, you know, in the third round, it's tough to make up because there's so few points on the board now. Meaning that the busts hurt you more than maybe, like, the boom bust picks, mm-hmm, nobody gets 90, 100 points anymore. So where's the boom go? The bust is going to be 30, 35 points.
Yeah.
Like, for example, in a pool I had Nathan MacKinnon last year, that's a big bust pick. And it ends up hurting you.
Sure, and the boom wouldn't have been that rewarding or anything.
Well, I mean, it's hard to get the hard to get rewarding.
Before we get into sort of some sleepers, so that people can file away for when they conduct their draft. Quick question about the Jets players. Last year, Ladd outscored Wheeler. Are you still taking Wheeler?
Ladd had his best year ever last year.
I know. Are you still taking Wheeler ahead of Ladd in terms of the first Winnipeg Jets player off the board?
Yes.
Yeah, you got to take Blake Wheeler just because his point totals have been higher and more consistent. But I think you're talking Andrew Ladd. He's also been fairly consistent. I think you're talking probably a fourth or fifth round pick.
Okay, let's go into the sleepers and the busts. Who have you marked down as you've been doing your prep for the upcoming pool? Your pool's when? Next Sunday, Ezzy?
Yep.
So next Sunday, you know, obviously you've been studying. You've taken the last 3 weeks off work to prepare for the pool. You know, who have you sort of circled as a guy that you're targeting as somebody who really could help you win your pool?
Well, I'll give you a couple of guys. You guys know how much I like Tyler Toffoli, and Tyler Toffoli earlier last season,
Los Angeles Kings.
Yep, playing you know, on that 70s line with Jeff Carter and Tanner Pearson, was tearing it up early and really struggled, and there were some injuries on that line, obviously. But to me, he's a guy that I think will probably be 10, 15 points at least higher than he was last year. So I believe he was at 49 points last year.
Tyler Toffoli was at 49 points, 23
right.
goals and 26 assists.
I didn't even look that up.
Yeah, you're very good.
So I think, you know, I would expect him to be in the 60, 65 point range. To me, he's a guy,
so,
again,
sort
a kind
of a, you
yeah,
see him taking a leap
yeah,
forward.
That's a sleeper pick. That's the way I look at a sleeper pick. Another guy to me that I had as a sleeper pick was Alex Galchenyuk, playing center, which I believe really was something that he wanted a couple years ago, Rich, when he broke into the NHL. So to me, Alex Galchenyuk is a guy that I still believe we haven't seen the best of Alex Galchenyuk. He's only 21 years old, by the way.
Galchenyuk, 46 points in 80 games last year for the Canadians. That was playing on the wing, going to start the season playing center.
Wouldn't be surprised if he's around the 60-65 point range for the Montreal Canadiens. I think he's only getting better with age, just like all of us here. So he's another guy. Another guy that, you know, I'll give one more and then I'll let Richie give a few sleeper picks. But another guy that I think is due for a breakout is Alexander Barkov. And I know that a lot of guys, a lot of fans, I should say, don't watch Florida as much, Richie. But Alexander Barkov, Nick Bjugstad, I mean, these guys are really good players. And, you know, Aaron Ekblad was obviously the kind of showstopper last year winning the Calder Trophy. But this guy can do everything. He's got speed. He's got a good shot. He's a playmaker. He's good on the power play. He's got the vision. Mm-hmm. So to me, Barkov, 36 points last year. I'd expect him to be in the kind of 50-55 point range, maybe even higher next year. So he's a guy for me that I would be taking higher in the hockey pool this year.
Richie?
Sleeper-wise, I like Elias Lindholm in Carolina. Okay. He's a skilled player, got stronger on his skates. They're going to need somebody to score. I know he hasn't. Bill Peters wasn't happy with that line actually the other night in the preseason game, but I think he's going to play with skilled players.
He had 39 points in 81 games last year for the Hurricanes.
Yeah, and he signed a 2-year deal, which I thought was a poor decision. I think he could probably get more if he's looking to maximize value. Contract-wise, Izzy and I talked about that, Drew, the other week when you were away, but I think I like his upside. Chris Kreider's another guy in New York. I think size and speed-wise, I think he can take another step forward. That's more, I think, leaning goal-wise than assists. He's more of a scorer. I think that's those are two guys that I think you should be looking at as well.
Kreider, 21 goals, 25 assists for 46 points in 80 games last season.
I think he can get close to the 30 mark. And I think, you know, again, you think, oh, 30. But no, nobody really scores anymore.
Sure.
Like, it's crazy that way, right? So in terms of other sleepers, I mean, I think you look at Colorado and a couple of those players and you say there has to be bounce back years. I'm not sure if those would constitute a sleeper or not.
If Nathan MacKinnon had 38 points last year, like you said, you took him where? In the first or second round last year, probably?
Yeah, second, I think it was.
Okay, so this year, if you take him in the fifth or sixth round, he might get you some pretty good value back to in the 65-70 point range.
Yeah, if you can get a rebound year. Another player I like, I don't know how you even go in drafts after the show. Valerie Nichushkin in Dallas.
Sure. Really coming off the hip surgery, though?
Coming off the hip surgery. Played at the end of last season. He's a really good talent, exceptional skater, big guy. If he can learn to use his teammates and he gets thrust onto a line with either Jason Spezza or Tyler Seguin, I mean, you could get some real nice value in a guy there.
Skill playing with skill, as we've said throughout the course of the show.
One other guy I want to mention, and Rich will get me on me here, because I seem to always pick the same players that I like. Alex Killorn is another guy on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Didn't have the offensive totals during the regular season, but in the playoffs, what did he have, 16, 17 points there on the top line, playing with Steven Stamkos, if you want to call that their top line. But Killorn is a guy that I think his point totals could go up next year. He had 38 points last year. I think he could, again, be in that kind of 50, 55, maybe even 60-point range this year.
One more. We're throwing a bunch out here. One more. Jets fans would recognize this last year. Again, as he talked about a player who kind of came into his own in the playoffs, quietly good season, but Jakob Silverberg last year. If he plays with that, you know, the whole season with that kind of confidence.
I like that one, Richie.
Yeah, Anaheim Ducks obviously was very good for the Ducks in the playoff series against the Jets. Head to break. When we come back, we continue. Pete Jensen, fantasy insider for NHL.com, is going to join us. We'll continue discussing getting you set for your hockey pool coming up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.